Streaming online everywhere at xray.fm. Radio is yours.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1920. That was the day remembered in Butte, Montana as Bloody Wednesday or the Anaconda Road Massacre. Butte was in the heart of copper mining country. By the turn of the century, Butte's population was 25% Irish. The copper king of Montana was a man named Marcus Daly. He sat at the head of the Anaconda Mining Company. Workers simply called it the Company. Hailing himself from Ireland, the County Cavan, the copper king was known to prefer Irish workers. With the spread of electricity, copper wiring was in high demand. Then World War I grew demand even further, and the company was in the business of delivering that copper with little regard for workers' safety. This disregard resulted in tragedy. A fire in June of 1917 killed 168 workers at the Granite Copper Mine. Miners went out on strike demanding better safety. The company called in federal troops to return the workers to the mine. The industrial workers of the world arrived in Butte to help organize the miners. Unionization efforts were met with armed resistance from the company. Frank Little, an IWW organizer, was hanged from a railroad trestle. No one was held accountable. Finally, on April 19th, the workers had had enough. They went out on strike. 2 days later, hundreds of miners gathered in front of the Neversweet Mine on Anaconda Road. They were met by Pinkerton detectives hired by the company. The company gun thugs fired into the crowd of workers, shooting many in the back as they tried to flee. 16 workers were wounded and one man died. The strike collapsed a few weeks later. Today's Labor History in Two brought to you in memory of Carol Hillman, a passionate friend of workers and volunteer of the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to X-Ray FM.
KXRY Portland.
At 91.1 and 107.1 FM.
And in Nehalem.
Wheeler.
Manzanita.
And Rockaway Beach.
At 91.7 FM. Streaming online everywhere.
Live and archived.
At xray.fm.
Radio is yours.
Radio is yours.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake. Birds and snakes and airplanes. Is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Churn world serves its own needs. Dummy serve your own needs. Feed it up an ox. Speak grunt. No strength. The ladder starts to clatter with fear. Fight down. High wire and a fire. Representing seven games in a government for hire and a combat site. Left to us are coming in a hurry with the furies breathing down your neck. Team by team reporters babble Trump. Tethered crop. Look at that. No plane. Fine. Then. Uh-oh. Overflow. Population common.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the
Lester Bangs, birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom, you symbiotic, patriotic, slam, but that, right? It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine.
Three of our program. On the line with us is our buddy Rachel Bitticofer, Dr. Rachel Bitticofer, PhD. You can read her columns on Substack at The Cycle on Substack. Just go over to Substack and plug in The Cycle, C-Y-C-L-E. She's also the author of the new book, Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. Rachel Bitticofer, B-I-T-E-C-O-F-E-R on Twitter and presumably on Blue Sky. Rachel, welcome back to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
It's always a pleasure. There's so much on your website. I love getting your newsletter. It's, by the way, for our listeners, it's free, and it's just brilliant. It comes in your email, just like all the Substack ones do. And there's so many things here I want to talk to you about. I think we booked you on this Trump versus the Pope, your most recent piece. So let's get that out of the way. It's this is about just war doctrine and Augustinians and all this sort of thing. Fill us in.
Yeah, this is my most recent piece. And it really is, the headlines last week that came up between the fight between the Pope and Trump. When the Pope gave a speech at a, it is an event about peace and war, but it really seemed quite targeted to rebutting Donald Trump, though the Pope denies that that was its specific.
Yeah, he says it was written 2 weeks earlier, so he was talking about Putin and Orban or something. Or Trump then, too.
Yeah, I mean, we had already assassinated their entire leadership, so I'm assuming it was us, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's neither hide or tail. What matters is what the argument the Pope was making, and what the argument is this very obscure thing that you might have heard bouncing off of some, mouths over the last couple of weeks called just war theory. And, I was reflecting how I covered that in an undergraduate class for con law. And I remember thinking, wow, this is really abstract, right? Now it's very tangible. And what just war theory argues is that there, you can't have aggressive war. And it's the product of centuries of humans failing to stop murdering each other and trying to figure out ways to make war more humane. And just war theory got blown out, obviously, by the Nazis in World War II, right? And we were able to go into that war, and we had all those just war principles on our side, right? Mm-hmm. And what's happened with Trump is, he has no cause. And his cause, his fake cause, is that they were imminently close to getting a nuclear weapon, but 3 months prior told the country that he had completely eliminated their nuclear threat.
Obliterated
it, right? So, there's no just cause to go into Iran. And what really stands out, Tom, and I think this will spark some memories for you, is that the way that they had to sell the Iraq War. And I point out that the evidence that they end up presenting to Congress is all hyped up, and that they failed to ever find the reason that the justification was imminent threat for mass destruction weapons, and there were none, right? But at the end of the day, they still spent 6 months selling the war to get congressional approval to go and do this war against Iraq. And we didn't do any of that, right? So, you know, he's so out of what we would call just war. And why it matters to Americans is that we may not realize this, but we are the now international pariahs. Like, all the goodwill that we've all grew up with, this idea that we would be respected because we were the country that stood for freedom and democracy, it's all wiped out, right? And people really should pay attention to some international news, because the international community understands that we have done a war of aggression just like the Nazis did.
Yep. And we did it at the bequest of Benjamin Netanyahu, who was doing it to stay out of prison, not for any reason that was actually good for Israel, as far as I can tell.
Oh, definitely not good for
Israel. You also, another piece that you published on April 16th was titled "Hell Hath No Fury Like a Woman Scorned." I thought this was a fascinating insight into the whole Elon Musk and MAGA thing. You want to tell us about that?
I'm so grateful you're highlighting that piece as well, because I think it's the most important recent publication I've had. And why is it? Because in Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, I talk about the machine that Republicans have spent the last four decades and billions of dollars building to control the media narrative. And of course, we know that they have Fox News, and Fox News's audience is 40 times bigger than CNN's audience, but it's gone so far beyond that. And so we've always kind of had a suspicion that what was happening was big money paying for centralization of narrative, paying influencers to carry that narrative till right-wing media picked it up and it became like a cacophony, right? Mm-hmm. And sure enough, one of Elon's baby mamas, if you're not much online, then you probably missed all this, but Elon has a lot of babies. He like makes babies everywhere. And one of them was most recently with a MAGA influencer named Ashley St. Clair. And, she, since that has been exposed, has fallen out of favor in the MAGA world. So she went to town, and she pretty much put up a very weird, because she's doing her makeup the whole time, and I guess that's a Gen Z thing, Tom, because I've never seen you do any makeup on your show, right? No. But anyway, so you get past that and listen to what she's saying, and I dissect what she's saying. You need, if you're in the fight against fascism in any capacity, from a major player to a bit player to a grassroots person, please read this article, because you need to know what we are up against and why some of us, are pushing so hard for better centralization and messaging in the party, because we're up against a machine that is funded by rich people through consultancies who are paying these influencers to basically elevate MAGA and hurt us.
Share a couple of examples that makes that real for our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Like, look at Biden old, okay? Mm-hmm. So why did we lose 2024? You can get down to the long and the hoe of it, was that the voters thought Biden was too old. And it was funny, right? Because Donald Trump is 2 years younger and just as, old. Mm-hmm. In fact, you could argue older, right? Because he would do these speeches where he would just rant off topic, right?
Although Biden did have that frozen moment during the debate. I think that's him down.
Very bad, very bad, right? And so, but that debate is June of 2024, Tom. Mm. They started Biden as old right after the inauguration. In fact, its first iteration was, you can't vote for Biden because Biden is actually going to die and they're going to put Kamala in charge by April of 2021. Okay, that's where it started. Okay. So they spent 3 years branding Biden as too old, and you could see it start in polling data. Okay. You could see like the amount of swing voters at independent pool growing and growing over time. Right. That's one good example of where they've used centralization across many, many different people and many different audiences to push an idea. And the other one really resonate with your audience is Jan 6, guys. I mean, when we came out of Jan 6, keep in mind, McCarthy knew it was an insurrection. McConnell knew it was an insurrection. For a little while there, Republicans knew it was an insurrection, right? Mm-hmm. And then, and he had done this with the big lie, right? They had made this false reality like seem viable and dominate the narrative. And I was like, gosh, can they actually get people to not believe their lying eyes? Because like the election fraud stuff, there's nothing to look at, but the right. Jan 6 ended in an insurrection, right? And you know, it took them a year to do it, but they did it, dude. And like over the years, you saw that percent of Republicans who minimized, at least in some capacity, if not outright objected to the insurrection, the idea that Trump had an insurrection, right? Yeah. And you know, so that's what they do. They shape public opinion very effectively with a lot of money, and we just don't have any kind of competing infrastructure for that.
To what extent do you think that that's because the Republican ideology, I mean, you know, going to the George Lakoff, you know, strict father versus nurturing family, that the Republican worldview is basically hierarchical, and so they accept, you know, top-down diktats, whereas in the Democratic Party, it's more of the nurturing family, it's more we're all in this together, everybody has a voice, and so it's just not intrinsically natural for yes. Democrats to do that.
It's also not a good investment for billionaires, okay? So, like, why are billionaires investing so heavily in Republican politics? And right now, there's this big grassroots pushback. Oh, I don't want to vote for a candidate that takes money from blank, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, our problem is that they don't have that problem, and they are going to have a massive cash advantage. They already do against us. I mean, Elon, who dropped $240 million by himself into 2024, right? So, you know, and the reason we don't want people to take money is because, you know, of obvious conflicts. Like, I wish we lived in a world where Democrats didn't need money to compete, but we do. And why it's hard to, I mean, there are some behavioral things, and you guys should check out Herding Cats on the Cycle Archive so you can really understand what Tom's talking about and how our natures are not designed to meet this moment against fascism, right? But, you know, in terms of the other part, we need the investment. The money matters, right? These guys don't operate the way we do. They're going to, like, pyrotechnic shows. They're having these fancy parties, fancy shows. Like, there's a lot of money. And why? Well, the billionaires know what they're buying when they give to MAGA. They're buying less regulation and less taxes, right? Mm-hmm. And that's all they care about, right? What is a billionaire's motive to invest on our side to save democracy? See, there's no personal profit motive. And that means that we don't have a lot of billionaires.
Right. We basically have Tom Steyer and J.B. Pritzker, and that's kind of it.
And Steyer spent, you know, he spent half a billion dollars on running for office himself. It's not like he spent that. If he spent half a billion dollars investing in digital branding work that I want to do, right? Like, yay, right? But he spent that money on himself.
I wrote an open letter to him begging him to buy Clear Channel when it was available for sale.
I mean, I could think of so many better uses than that. So, you know, I appreciate that Steyer has money. But, yeah, we don't have – what we have to find is a or two billionaires who are truly committed – you know, to building this infrastructure for us. And it's, you know, there's no personal motive for them to do that, right? So we're really, you know, we're never going to be able to compete against that, in my opinion, because of that limitation. But it is important for people to understand we can't win office on fairy dust, okay? Yeah. Like, we have to have money to compete. And I would love to be a Puritan, but the idea that we're going to take refuse money from this and that and this and who is really damaging. It's very reminiscent, Tom, of banning partisan gerrymandering in blue states.
Right.
While they were
it's surrendering in advance. Yeah.
Right.
I totally
and
get
now
it.
Virginia tonight votes to try to repeal.
There you go.
A good
it's going to be real interesting. Rachel, I'm out of time. I'm sorry. Here we're hitting a break. I don't know if you can hear the music, but
no, I can't. Sorry.
You can't. I figured.
I would bow out. Yeah,
it's 18 minutes past the hour. Thank you. Rachel Bitticofer. Hang on just a second, Rachel.
Thank
we're going to get stepped on here.
This
hang on.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
Our Substack newsletter is called The Cycle over on Substack. TheCycle.substack.com. Check it out. It's free. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you, Tom.
Minutes past the hour. Welcome back. And let's see, picking up some calls here. Joyce in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Joyce, what's on your mind today?
Well, I just wanted to ask
oh, Oh, Joyce, your phone is breaking up. We've reached out to our phone provider, and we're asking them to do. I'm going to put you on hold. Most likely in a minute or two when I bring you back, it'll work. So we'll see. Larry in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Hey, Larry, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. How you doing today, sir?
Good. What's up?
Good. We love you so much and appreciate you so much, Tom.
Thank you.
The only thing I need to do is ask you next year. I think it's in October. I'm gonna go full Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think I'm okay now, my age and my physical health, I think it's pretty good. I don't have to get a drug plan. Do I have to have anything else besides that, Tom, besides a drug plan to go full Medicare?
No.
Anything I'm overlooking, anything?
Well, there's the other option. Medicare doesn't cover 20% of some expenses. Now, Ziggy, who's okay. A regular participant in our program, and just had rather extensive cancer and very expensive cancer surgery, has not been okay. buy, and you can buy a what's called a Medigap policy that fills in that 20%. Most of the people who have been calling into this program say that they like the Mutual of Omaha ones, but there's other companies, pretty much all the companies offer them. But that's, okay. you know, it's a couple $100 a month. And Ziggy decided not to do that and just to save that couple $100 a month and see which was going to cost him more. And he's been doing this for 5-6 years now, and he calculates that even with his cancer surgery and everything else, he's ahead of the game. So I can't advise you not to buy it, because I would never advise anybody not to be insured. But look into the Medigap plans, and then look into you've got to have a Medicare Part D. That's the drug program. There are free ones out there as well as inexpensive ones. A lot of that's going to depend on what drugs you're using, you know, because some of them have special
and still come out ahead. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'll still come out ahead. Okay. Thank you, Tom, so
sure
much.
Enough. Thank you, Larry. Good talking to you.
All right, sir. Okay.
Bye.
All right. You too, sir. Bye.
Jan, thank you. Let's try Joyce in Olympia again. Joyce, is your phone working now?
Can you hear me?
Oh, no, it's not. I'm sorry. It just broke up again. Damn, we got to fix this. We are going to get this thing fixed. I promise you. Like I said, we just reached out to our telephone providers. Jan in Etna Green, Indiana. Jan, what's on your mind?
Well, Tom, I just found out this morning that our election denier governor has allowed Indiana to become the 8th state to allow Turning Point USA into our schools.
Oh, geez.
And I am just furious.
Run for the school board, Jan. I'm serious.
Well, I'm a little old to run for much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And
encourage
this
others.
Is a very, 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 very red district.
Yeah.
But these people have done nothing but bastardize the teachings of Jesus.
Yeah.
And I really think it needs to end.
Yeah.
And so people in other states, beware. They're coming.
Oh, yeah. They absolutely are. This is well-funded by a group of billionaires, Turning Point USA. In fact, the two people who started it, one was a very rich guy who was, anti-COVID vaccines. He died of COVID. And the other guy, of course, Charlie Kirk, who was anti-gun control, and he died of a gun. These people are nuts. Jan, thank you. Change starts with you. You can be calling your Democratic or Republican representatives to let them know what you think by calling 202-224-3121. It's the Capitol switchboard. It'll get you right through to them. Welcome back. 23 minutes past the hour. Well, it looks like Donald Trump's art of the deal is failing again in Iran. He was saying, "Oh, Vance, he's on a plane to Pakistan," and then the White House had to say, "No, I'm sorry, Grandpa Befuddle Pants is wrong. You know, he should go empty his diaper. It's not Vance. Vance is not going to Pakistan, and you know, it's so the talks are on hold, and the Straits of Hormuz are still closed." Jacqueline in Northfield, Michigan. Hey, Jacqueline, what's on your mind today?
Well, I have a question about Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
I just signed up for Part A last month, and only Part A because my husband, he won't be eligible for Medicare till the end of 2031.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a business owner, but he's also a union member because he's been in the IBEW, you know, since forever.
Yeah, my brother's union.
Works in the field. So he's still out in the field, but he's an owner. So my understanding is when he retires, the union is a Medicare Advantage policy.
Mm-hmm.
Am I stuck? And so obviously I'm not going to go full Medicare till he retires. I'm going to stay on, you know, the current medical policy he has.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, can spouses go their separate ways? Can I, I'm sure he'll just do what's there.
Yeah.
Do I have to follow him or can I go on my own Medicare?
You have exceeded my knowledge of the intricacies of this system, Jacqueline. I'm sorry. There are people called Medicare navigators. Be very, very careful because some of them are insurance salesmen trying to pretend that they are Medicare navigators. And they operate at the state level. You know, each state has some, and I'm sorry, I don't have the, but, you know, look that up. Social Security Works in Washington, D.C., their socialsecurityworks.org is their website. Alex Lawson is their president. He fills in for me from time to time on this program. He's a regular guest. They have a ton of information, and they will, and you might be able to call them or talk to them. Those are the two resources that I know of that might be able to help you. And, of course, just calling Medicare itself, although because, you know, Elon Musk fired 7,000 Medicare employees, that might mean that you'll have to sit on hold for 4 or 5 hours. But
Hopefully not 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. My guess, but, you know, this is just a guess, and so don't do anything based on it, but my guess would be that a spouse can go their own way. But I don't know anything about the IBEW plan either, because my brother, who is a lifelong member of IBEW, is of my three brothers, he's the one who died a couple of years ago. And so I haven't, you know, been able to talk to him or keep up with him on that. I know that he was on real Medicare, even though he had retired from IBEW. So, but I never discussed with him the details of it. So I'm sorry.
That's okay. I mean, they do contracts, so maybe, you know what I mean. With the insurance company and the
union rep might be able to tell you too.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe call the benefits office at the union hall.
Well, yeah. And just, you know, just be up front. You know, I really don't want Medicare Advantage. What are my options? How does this work?
Right.
So, Jacqueline, good luck.
All right, well, thank you.
If you figure it out, you know, you might want to give us a shout back to let other people know. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Great.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Good talking to you. Long time since I've been in Northfield,
Michigan.
You're
listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
27 minutes past the hour. Picking up your calls here on the other side of the break. Stay with us. Lunges at the nuclear codes, his labor secretary drowns in sleaze, ICE snatches an army wife, Israeli soldiers terrorize Palestinian girls, and your nurse goes gig. Good morning, this is the Commonwealth Report, news for the public, not the powerful. You can sign up at commonwealthreport.news. Did Trump reach for the nuclear codes? Donald Trump's story on Iran changes by the hour. In less than 48 hours this weekend, he swung from claiming Iran, quote, agreed to everything, to threatening that the whole country is going to get blown up. He told ABC that Vance wouldn't fly to Pakistan. Then his UN ambassador and energy secretary said, yes, he would. Staff scrambled to clean up the mess. Trump claimed Iran promised never to close the Strait of Hormuz. Iran promptly announced they're closing it. He told The Hill that gas prices will drop the minute this war ends. A week later, he told Fox News they'd stay about the same. Iran's foreign ministry flatly denied they'd agreed to hand over enriched uranium. Vance proposed a 20-year nuclear moratorium at the talks. Trump rejected his own VP's offer, saying, I don't like the 20 years. And now retired CIA analyst Larry Johnson alleges on the Judging Freedom podcast that Trump reached for the nuclear codes on Saturday and General Dan Kane stood up and said, no. That's unconfirmed, but deeply troubling. This is who's got the nuclear button. Are Trump's scandals drowning out democracy? Labor Secretary Lori Chavez de Remer resigned yesterday, and what the greatest hits list she leaves behind is pretty grim. She allegedly had an affair with her own security detail. She kept bourbon, Kahlua, and champagne in her office. She took staff to a strip club on a government trip. She used taxpayer dollars for fake official trips to visit friends. Her husband got banned from Labor Department headquarters after two female employees accused him of sexually assaulting them. And she reportedly retaliated against those two women. Meanwhile, her elderly father was texting young female staffers, asking them to keep their meetings private. She's the third woman Trump has pushed out of his cabinet in 7 weeks. Kristi Noem was gone in March, Pam Bondi gone earlier this month. Meanwhile, cabinet men with worse track records keep their jobs. And that's just one scandal. Steve Witkoff ran signal chats from Russia. NVIDIA got cleared to sell chips to China for a 25% kickback. Trump tried to fire Fed Governor Lisa Cook over bogus mortgage fraud claims. Vance is meddling in prosecutions. Steve Bannon once said the way to beat the media is to flood the zone. Well, it's working. Democracy dies when nobody can keep track. Does this administration's cruelty have any bottom? Meet Sergeant First Class Jose Serrano. 27 years in the Army, deployed to Afghanistan. On April 14th, his wife, Daisy, walked into an El Paso immigration office for her parole and place interview, the program designed to protect military spouses. ICE arrested her on the spot. A federal judge granted her protection from deportation to El Salvador back in 2019 under the Convention Against Torture. So Stephen Miller's ICE plans to ship her to Mexico instead, a country she's never lived in. Serrano can't visit her because active duty soldiers can't travel to Mexico. And this is the policy? The administration's already spent $40 million shipping migrants to places like Congo, Uganda, and South Sudan. Over $133,000 per person. This is what cruelty as policy looks like. Are Israeli soldiers using rape as a weapon in the West Bank? A new report from the West Bank Protection Consortium says yes. Researchers interviewed 83 Palestinian communities and documented 16 cases of conflict-related sexual violence over 3 years. And those are just the cases survivors were willing to report. Palestinian men, women, and children described forced nudity, invasive body cavity searches, Israeli soldiers exposing themselves to minors, and threats of rape. In Wadi el-Sheikh, settlers and soldiers stripped villagers, urinated on them, and attempted to assault one man with a broom handle. They photographed it and shared the pictures. Girls are quitting school. Parents are marrying off daughters as young as 15 just to protect them from the soldiers. More than two-thirds of families surveyed said rising sexual violence was the breaking point that made them leave their land. That's ethnic cleansing by humiliation. And we, the United States, are funding it. Will Silicon Valley turn your nurse into a gig worker? A report just out from the Roosevelt Institute sounds the alarm on what they're calling Uber for nursing. Companies like ShiftKey, ShiftMed, CareRev, and Clipboard Health have raised hundreds of millions from venture capital to turn bedside nursing into piecework. Nurses bid against each other for shifts by offering to work for less. One nurse's $23 an hour ends up at $13 an hour after the app's safety fee, insurance fees, payday fees, and shift fees. No supervisor, no accountability, no training at the facility. And now these companies are running the Uber playbook in state legislatures, lobbying to get nurses classified as independent contractors with no labor protections. Colorado even already passed it. Your loved one's nurse could be a stranger who just bid lowest on an app. That's not healthcare. That's a race to the bottom with your life. And that's the way it is today, Tuesday, April 21st. I'm Tom Hartman.
Help
help support Progressive Radio. If you're listening to us on a commercial station, call their advertisers and let them know you're listening. If you're listening to us on Pacifica, one of our many nonprofit stations, please support them when they do their fundraising drives. Thanks for supporting Progressive Talk Radio, and tag you're it. Did you know that the ancient Roman Republic, you know, which for 480 years was actually a democratic republic before Julius Caesar kind of ended the democracy phase and replaced it with the autocracy phase, that they were brought down by a very small group of very rich people? The richest man in ancient Rome was Marcus Licinius Crassus. He was the richest guy. The billionaire of Rome. And he frankly hated the Roman free bread for all welfare system. It was being paid for with his tax dollars, after all. So him and Pompey the Great and a few other rich guys got together, and they basically crashed Rome. They turned it into an oligarchy and then into a tyranny. And the parallels to what Trump is doing right now are absolutely shocking. There's an article about it over at HartmanReport.com titled American Caesar, Trump's Path to Power Mirrors Rome's Darkest Days. Check it out. Welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour. So Chief Justice Roberts and the Clean Power Plan. This is a big deal. SteveVladek.com is writing about this. Back in 2016, when President Obama was president, he had this clean power plan to get all the mercury out of the air and you know, begin phasing out coal plants. And the fossil, and by the way, it didn't kick in fully until 2030. I mean, this was way out in the future, like more than a decade out in the future. But the power industry, the fossil fuel industry, went nuts when Obama proposed this because it would have increased their costs very slightly. So their hundreds of billions of dollars in profits would become maybe a little, you know, $2 or $3 billion less. Their multi-million dollar executive bonuses might have lost a couple $1,000s. So they were like, you know, no, we can't have this. So they went to Chief Justice Roberts and said, do something about this. And Justice Roberts began this thing that has now become known as the shadow docket. And, you know, behind the scenes, he led this charge, and by the way, the way he did it, the New York Times outed this earlier this week. I talked about it a little bit when it happened, and he did it based on basically lies and, you know, these so-called emergency applications. And he tried to railroad the court. He basically trashed his other colleagues who were opposed to it, the so-called liberals. You know, keep in mind, Amy Coney Barrett wasn't objecting. Her dad is a fossil fuel lawyer, has been his whole life. I mean, you know, Republicans are all in the pocket of the fossil fuel industry, but apparently, particularly John Roberts, who used to work in the Reagan administration when the Reagan administration was in the pocket of the fossil fuel industry. It was oil industry money that got Reagan into the White House back in 1980. So he changed the question, he changed the facts, he changed this whole irreparable harm thing, and refused to acknowledge the precedent that they were setting. I don't want to go into all the kind of long and wonky details about it, but would recommend to you, it's been a few days, maybe a week since the New York Times did this piece on the origin of the shadow docket, but it's fairly easy to find with, you know, any kind of web search, and it's worth your time and effort, because it's truly shocking how just disgustingly political this court has become. I mean, you had Sam Alito saying, oh, yeah, we're going to criminalize or allow states to criminalize abortion because a witch-burning judge in the 17th century in England said quack, 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 and therefore that's, you know, original thought, right? Clarence Thomas being the deciding vote and saying, well, we should allow billionaires like Harlan Crow, who gives me millions of dollars and you know, bought my mother's house and put my son through, my adopted kid through school and takes me on million-dollar vacations, because he should be able to buy politicians when he wants to. I mean, it's Sam Alito taking, you know, expensive vacations from these same people, the Federalist Society, you know. This court, or at least the Republicans on this court, are so grotesquely, disgustingly corrupt, and they have so corrupted our politics between the Citizens United decision, the Bush v. Gore decision, and others that, you know, American democracy is in, and now is in trouble. And the shadow docket rulings, by the way, not only did he strip power from Obama with the shadow docket ruling, that's when it began, but now they're using them to give power to Trump. Without any, you know, debate, without hearing oral arguments, without thoughtful consideration. Just, hey, it's because the majority of Republicans on the court want it that way. This is so wrong. All right, what's on your mind today? Sia in West Los Angeles. Hey, Sia, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for, you know, having us on. And I feel like you might have misunderstood me last week when I called, but that's for another conversation. Today, I wanted to touch upon the taxing billionaires issue that we seem to have. I mean, it seems like we give these billionaires the money anyway in the first place. Instead of demanding they return it, why don't we just stop giving them the money? Like, I know it's hard, but, you know, obviously it creates a situation where all of the mom and pops are gone. We now really have this dependence on using Netflix or Amazon. But if we're in spaces where we can choose to, you know, start ground roots again, you know, every day is the first day of something big, right?
Yep.
So if we decide to come together, you know, have solidarity, boycott, literally just do the simplest thing, you know, our ancestors were able to do this. You know, why can't we? Why can't we just boycott?
It's one of the most popular things when you do polling is taxing the billionaires. It's, you know, people get it. The billionaires pay nothing in taxes, and it's just wrong.
Exactly. So let's stop giving them the money that they use anyway to fund wars.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I feel like we are in spaces sometimes where we're talking to, like, people like Jeff Bezos or Warren Buffet, and we laugh to them, you know, we show them our, but we don't challenge them. I mean, the people that are in the spaces to appear as friends to these people, they don't challenge them enough to be like, hey, you know, actually, blah, blah, blah. But then we go to our social medias and say, yes, tax billionaires. But then when we are in the spaces of these billionaires in their faces, we don't say anything. So that's kind of hypocritical.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
And you know, you were saying something earlier about the religious passes, about someone wants religion to permeate everything. Mm. I mean, religion does permeate everything already.
Mm.
You know, the times of the Spanish Inquisition and the witch hunts did not just disappear. You know, history does inform the present. Those people that tortured brutally, that, you know, during the medieval times were, you know, tortured in front of pregnant women, those DNAs do transform to the present time, and we mutate. We then get psychologically stifled, you know, to even challenge these indoctrinations anymore. And religion does permeate education. It permeates our military, as you could see with the Holy Crusades and things like that, and even down to social contracts and healthcare.
Yep.
The reason women are still second-class citizens in a lot of Abrahamic religious societies, for instance, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, and you've got trauma that it's called epigenetic transmission, where trauma actually alters our DNA, and then we pass that along to our children.
Exactly.
You know, human evolution is still happening. Actually, this is now well documented, and in some cases, maybe in bad ways. So we all have an obligation to live a better life and to tax the billionaires. See, thank you. Very, very well said. Great to hear from you. Thank you. Mildred in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Mildred, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hi.
Well, what's on my mind is the Iran war, and let me tell you why. Yesterday, I saw Jimmy Jordan in the Congress when the reporters were questioning him, and he was saying how much we support Israel, he is our ally.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then today, I get a hold of the clip where the veterans were in the Capitol protesting this illegal war.
Yeah, the veterans.
So then I make a call to Jimmy Jordan's number, and I tell him, your allegiance is to... No, I reprimand him about true patriotism, and those people standing in that rotunda are true patriots.
Right.
And I said, you are not.
Yeah, shouldn't you be paying attention to veterans rather than Netanyahu?
Yeah, well, it goes more to that. And so I told him that I don't consider him a real American.
Hmm.
And I also told them that war is profitable, the industrial military complex.
Yeah, as Eisenhower told us.
And then I told them, you serve the Heritage Foundation, the Olin Foundation, the Bradley Foundation. Then I told him the Big Beautiful Act is the Antichrist Act. And then I told him about the Save America Act. I said that Save the Billionaire Act to make sure that the billionaires destroy the middle class.
So how'd they react to all this, Mildred?
Who knows? Let me finish. Okay. I'm going to put another plug. I'm going to put another plug for your book. And so then I say to him, why don't you get out of our Congress and go work for Charles Koch? Then
he already does.
you and I know this very well. And so then anyway, and so you always say, call this Washington number. I call all the time. I just don't call my Democrats. I also call the Republicans. And it is imperative that you call the Republicans.
I agree. I think it's more important to call the Republicans right now than the Democrats. I mean, we want to buck up the Democrats and push them in a good direction. But if we can get a handful of Republicans to abandon Donald Trump in the House and Senate, you know, we could get Trump impeached. I mean, we could do something. We could actually change the course of American history, which would be a good thing. Mildred, I got to run, but thank you for the call. It's great to hear from you. We'll be right back. It is 45 minutes past the hour. Stay with us.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be right back with your calls, exposing the con in conservative. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Stay with us. And welcome back. Ralph in Kirkland, Washington. Hey, Ralph, what's on your mind today?
Well, I can't understand why you're so down on Medicare Advantage, because I'm with Kaiser Permanente, and I've had three major events, and they took care of me wonderfully.
Kaiser is probably the best Medicare Advantage program out there if you're going to go with Medicare Advantage, and because it's a nonprofit. And so their principal goal is to, number one, bring you into their system and keep you in their system, and number two, to provide services to you. That's very much not the case with the for-profit companies that are running Medicare Advantage. The largest one is United Healthcare, which makes literally billions of dollars in profits on Medicare Advantage, and has been a number of these companies actually have been exposed as basically ripping off the government by upcoding people, you know, telling the government that we're sicker than we are and that sort of thing. So if you're on Kaiser Medicare Advantage, I would not, you know, I'm not going to trash talk them. It's probably one of the few ones that's actually okay.
Okay, so it's basically because they are nonprofit. And,
correct.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome, Ralph. Ralph, thanks a lot for the call. It's nice to hear from you. Joan in Ramino Island, Washington. Hey, Joan, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Long-time listener, second-time caller.
Thank you.
It's funny because he just mentioned Kaiser as an Advantage plan. My husband worked for Seattle City Light, and Aetna was the Advantage plan that they offered. He was on that insurance. He had a pretty bad cancer, and when he was retiring, they offered for the spouse to also go on. But what I did was, I still was a couple years before retirement, and he was a longtime listener, and so that's when he was finding out about Advantage plans. But also, he was being denied for just his basic every 3 month imaging.
Yeah, this is what the for profit plans do.
Yeah, Yeah. So the supplemental plans are the way to go. Mm-hmm. I haven't investigated whether or not being on regular Medicare. I still have my doubts about that because I did work in the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. I actually helped with huge billing projects, et cetera. But for the woman who called in that wondered if she needs to go on that Advantage plan because her husband's being offered that, mm-hmm. she does not. The Advantage for the company that he worked for, the union that he's in, they will offer that at like a discount because of the way they do the pricing. Mm-hmm. But I would say she's fine to just go on a supplemental plan, or if she wants to investigate, just doing regular Medicare.
Yeah.
But my friends that are on Advantage plans, they seem to love them, but none of them have had any total joint replacements, back surgery.
Everybody loves them until they get sick.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which is the whole point of insurance.
Right.
Yeah.
Medicare Advantage is private insurance. Yeah, it is
exactly.
Not Medicare.
It's private insurance, yeah. And more often than not, it's a ripoff. And Kaiser is more or less the big exception to that. And I've said that before on this program. Joan, thank you for the calls.
And that's true.
Yeah, it's nice to hear
you're welcome.
From you. Thank you. It's 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be right back. Hey, thanks so much for sharing our program and for reaching out to our stations and sponsors and letting them know that you're listening. It really means a lot to us. So remember the John Durham investigation in which he said, "Oh, the FBI never should have looked into Donald Trump's connections to Russia." And I'm scratching my head going, how can he even think this? I mean, the guy that Donald Trump hired as his first campaign manager, Paul Manafort had taken $66 million from oligarchs associated with Vladimir Putin to install Viktor Yanukovych as the dictator of Ukraine. $66 million. He took money from, he was paid $1 million by the dictator of Zaire, back when it was Zaire, to develop a strong relationship with Moscow. And when finally they threw Yanukovych out of Ukraine, that was in 2015, what did Manafort do? He came to the United States and he said to Donald Trump, "Well, let me help you," while he's taking money from Moscow. I mean, if nothing else, that should have been a starting point, a huge starting point for the FBI. There's a whole rant about this over at HartmanReport.com. Check it out. 9 minutes before the hour, picking up your calls here. Aram in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Aram, what's up?
Hey, Aram, what's up? Hi, Tom, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Tom, I want to talk about the Strait of Hormuz. And I would like to suggest, instead of using the term blockage, to use the term regulation. And this is why.
Okay.
There are three international matters involved. There is one called the 1958 Geneva Convention on the Law of the Sea. Then there is the 1982 UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. And then there is the customary international law. Customary international law, you can think of it as a common law. Mm-hmm. So it's something we've been doing for hundreds of years. Nobody complains, so we're going to continue. That's like a backstop to when there is no treaty that expressly takes over. So looking at the 1958 Geneva Convention, United States has fully ratified that convention. That convention had a hole. The biggest hole it had, it did not allow for a ship owner to dispute passage through certain waterways, such as the Strait of Hormuz. It gave the entire regulation to the coastal countries, which were, in this case, would be Iran and Oman.
Mm-hmm.
The 1982 convention tried to rectify that plus some other stuff. The rectification it did, it says don't look at the act, don't look at the feeling about that ship, look at its conduct. If it is a warship but it's not in war with you, let it go. If it is a warship and it is in war with you, then you can stop it.
Right.
So that's basically, and it gave a 12 categories.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, United States has neither signed the 1982, and of course, if it doesn't sign it, it cannot ratify it through the Congress.
Right.
So United States is fully obligated by the 1958 Geneva Convention, which allows the coastal countries, in this case being Iran, to fully regulate when there is a ship that is in war with it.
So you're arguing, Aram, that what Iran is doing is perfectly legal by international law.
It is almost perfectly legal because Iran only signed the 1958 convention. It didn't ratify it. But it is a signatory to the 1982. Oman has fully ratified the 1982 UN convention. United States has neither signed it. And that's because during Reagan was concerned that it has clause regarding mining in the deep seas.
Right.
And it wanted that to be rewritten. It never got around it. So United States has neither signed it nor has ratified it.
Fascinating. Aram, I appreciate your knowledge on this. Who enforces this and what do we, you know, where does this go? What do we do with this information?
Well, just like any other international law, the enforcement goes through the UN and through the international court. International court. But the point is that Iran has some legal basis for doing what it's doing. United has nothing. There is no United Nations mandate through the Security Council.
Oh, because the U.S. does not control land in that area. It would have to be Oman doing it on behalf of us, for example.
Yes, and also United States right now seizing ships in the international high seas.
That Which is piracy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So United has no legal leg. I mean, it's got the weapon, no doubt.
Yeah.
But Iran has certain amount of legal. There are some.
Well, we're operating under the principle of might makes right. You know, I mean, that's Trump's theory.
Yeah, that's the case. And Iran is extending that. It's considered an innocent passage clause, and it's extending that to the Arab countries around the Persian Gulf. It says you are giving base to my enemy. You're giving the right of flight to my enemies. So now you are a hostile country to me. So Iran has some legs. I'm not saying it's perfect, but compared to U.S., it's enormously more. And that's why I will not.
Is anybody arguing this in the United Nations, Aram?
Not that I know of at the moment, but I don't think Iranians have the wit to do that right now. They're more worried about not getting bombed.
Yeah, they're a little tied up.
They got bombed at the negotiation table. Twice.
Yeah. Aram, I got to run, but thank you for the call. That was fascinating. I was unaware of that. I learn something every day. We have the smartest listeners on earth. That's why it's such a privilege doing this program with you every day. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us, and that includes you. So get out there, get active, tag, you're it. Have a great afternoon. Be good to yourself and the folks around you. Stay safe, and I'll catch up with you tomorrow.
Been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
While the production of my lowdown commentaries is high tech, I confess that I'm antiquated. I still write each piece in longhand, applying my ballpoint to paper. This has caused bewildered glances from some who see me scribbling away in local coffee shops and bars. Recently, one fellow sidled up and whispered, "Watch out! If they see you doing this, they'll haul you off to the Smithsonian." But we handwriters might not be as obsolete as the key tappers assume. A fast-spreading grassroots movement is calling for schools to re-emphasize the value of writing and printing by hand instead of being wholly dependent on machines. Already, 24 states, as varied as Mississippi and California, now require public schools to teach cursive writing in 3rd through 5th grades. This squares with new understanding of how brains absorb information. While keyboards are faster, the slower, more tactile act of handwriting creates longer-lasting comprehension of letters and better retention of the thoughts they convey. Neuroscientists find that rote keystrokes on a computer require little mental engagement, while physically drawing out words and ideas takes coordination of multiple areas of the brain to focus memory, eyes, and fingers on creating a written product. Just writing this piece conjured up a fond remembrance of my early childhood, sitting on the floor of our home learning to draw the ABCs, both print and cursive, on those line practice pads. It was both an artistic exercise and the development of a foundational tool for a life of learning. This is Jim Hightower.